Thank you very much to Antje Eman and all the organising team for allowing me to have this opportunity to take part in this conference. It was absolutely clear to me as soon as I was invited that I would love to be here. Although I'm not a film expert myself. But maybe I do know a little bit about gestures and hands and objects. Hands and gestures, together with tools, can be seen in very many of these shots comprised within the Labour in a Single Shot project. But in the context of the project, rather than talking about tools, I'd actually prefer to talk about objects, or even more openly, about things. Because in the trio of concepts that create the title of our panel, the notion of tool or instrument is the one that appears most problematic to me. We see a broad spectrum of objects that hands deal with, and that are involved in gestures. But if you look at the subway film, which we've just seen, it becomes very clear, for example, that this X-ray scanner is a great deal more than a simple instrument. In media theory, very important to distinguish between tools or instruments and media, which is something that, for example, architects don't understand when they talk about their design tools, although they're actually highly complex computer-assisted design tools and processes. Gestures involve the hands of human actors in very different artifacts, and it's this difference which ranges from bent-reinforced iron rods right through to the scanner I just mentioned. That's documented in Labour in a Single Shot, indicating the fate of work and the recodification of gestures. It makes clear that in many activities, Labour no longer calls for gestures. We see operations which deploy force, but these are no longer gestures related to force, but they are control and signaling operations, picking up on what's just been said as well about grima, as well the distinction that was made between, on the one hand, gestures of action and gestures of communication. In many of the films that we have looked at here, picking them out from the shortlist, I think it's very striking this distinction does not need to be made nearly so clearly or sharply. And I would say that that's the case in Subway Security, which we've just seen. The hand there cannot clearly decide, at least for our eye, it is not clear whether the hand decides clearly. Does it wish to act? Or does it wish to communicate? It does not process anything or use a tool. What it does is try to portion the flow of people who want to go into the underground into individual units. Pointing out to them whether they put their bags into the scanner or not. The hand functions as an optical signal, and at the same time as a mechanical brake and control unit. The hand here is both an agent of the scanner, on the one hand, and an agent of the security dispositive. In the broader sense, this also teaches us something about the way in which the hand can be a part of power dispositives and their changes and alterations. With Michel Foucault, we could say the urban, as it seems to us here, is no longer determined as was the case until the 18th century, via walls that create a dichotomy between the interior and exterior in the city, but rather through the prism of control of circulation. Danger is hence not that which penetrates from the exterior. Danger comes from within, is inherent to the populace. Think, for example, of the classical literary work here in this context, Edgar Allan Poe's The Man of the Crowd. The dangerous individual in modernity is devoid of characteristics. How on earth should you be able to recognise this individual? And in this context, the link between hand and door is significant. And when I say door, I'm referring to the door in a broader sense that fits with our modern dispositives of security and control. Door is the classic door, certainly, but also door in terms of a fence, a security fence, keeping people out. The door is no longer nomothetic. It is not a symbolic machine in the spirit of ethnology. And in terms of conveying particular law, a door has become a biopolitical and security political machine. At the airport Narita in Tokyo, the temperature of individual passengers is measured. They go through a temperature scanner. Many measured every, the temperature is measured in the fraction of a section. If you have flu, then you're picked out and selected out of the group. Now, what's very important is the distinction between operations which the activity of the hand is linked to the activity of the face and those in which the activity of the hand occurs without participation of the face in a bilateral, unilateral mode. This is a quote from André Leroy Gorhan in Hand and Word, an Analysis of Technical Gestures. In terms of evolutionary biology, in many animals who can walk upright, we have the link of gestures between activities of lips and teeth. Before we can grasp something with our hand in terms of evolutionary biology, what we do is grasp something with our lips and with our teeth. So when we talk of the face, we're talking first and foremost of the mouth. Grasping, picking something up, must be transmitted to the hand. And then the connection between hand and mouth can be replaced by the connection between hand and eye. And grasping something with the hand can be controlled by the eye, so that the gestures become constantly more finely tuned. It's very interesting here to consider how many filmmakers who were part of this project incorporated a distinction between hands and faces into their directorial choices. I'd like to cite two without us having to show them both. For example, Nicole Tini's The Origamist, Boston 2013. Here, the camera is directed for at least 1 minute to the hands of a man doing something which I at least could not understand. I know, however, that the eyes that hors champ, off screen, belong to these hands are directed towards these hands. The editing, the camera position does not function in terms of the relationship between eye and hand, but the other way around, through the relationship hand to eye on the one hand and mouth on the other hand. Here, the mouth talks all kinds of esoteric stuff which has nothing to do with what the hands are doing. The mouth interprets what is being done, asserting that what the hands are doing is not work, but instead art, and talking about creativity. This shot shows us that when the gesture follows an automated program, the mind, the ratio, can be confused and become susceptible two discourses of the kind we've heard since Renaissance about the distinction between craft and art, which some believe must be separated one from the other. A very different example as well, this time with a woman rather than a male figure, An Onion at a Time, Johannesburg, 2014. It shows a woman, and she's peeling onions in a restaurant kitchen. The filmmakers, throughout almost the entire shot, depict only her hands. And let us hear what she's saying. Her head, her eyes, which are directed towards her hands, only appear right at the very end of the shot. When you film work, again and again, we see the evolution of the technical gesture as examined by Laurent Gouron as part of the thematic approach, the way in which language and thought, on the one hand, and eye and hand, on the other hand, interact. Do they act together or are they decoupled? How does the camera relate to the linkage or delinkage of eye and hand? Can the camera actually unlink or decouple eye and hand? A few weeks before his death, I talked with Haroun about Robert Bresson's Pickpocket. In Pickpocket, the entire filmic subject matter is articulated by means of doors, as is also the case in most of Bresson's other films. The doors are part of the law here. They articulate the entire urban space. Often, we see policemen at the edge of Bresson's images in Pickpocket securing the doors of the police station, the entrance to the racetrack, or entrance to the metro. They introduce something like a visible backstage into the field of the film. Before the action in a shot kicks off, we see the actors as non-actors waiting outside a grill until an official from the metro opens up that grill and the action of the film can begin. I'd like here, if I may, to show you another film which we so far have not seen. I hope that's possible. And the film is Waiting, Hanoi 2013, Le Viet Tha. I could talk for at least 20 minutes about just these 2 minutes, I think it's a fantastic film. But I'll just concentrate on the aspects that are particularly relevant now in this context. I can't talk, for example, about the two construction workers that you see working away in the background all the time, and who've slipped into this film, whether intentionally or unintentionally on the part of the filmmaker. That would be fascinating to talk about them too, and to incorporate them into the interpretation, but I really don't have scope for that. The young woman we see here has her hand on the iron bars of a crowd barrier. Later she takes her hand away for a moment, and then she puts her hand on the upper bar of this barrier, which can be pushed back and forth. And the same hand that she has on the barrier, she also has a rolled up signalling flag. And I wonder, is she holding on to the barrier, or is the barrier holding on to her? Or is she just holding on to keep herself upright? She's not holding the barrier open. It stays open of its own accord. But the contact between her hand and the barrier shows that she operates this small symbolic machine and hence has an office, a position. Her hand signifies that the position of being open is a latent state of being closed. Her hand transforms this gateway into a digital machine. It is open because it could also be closed. So once again, who is holding on to whom here? Who is detaining whom? Who is holding what in position? Her hand on the barrier shows why she is in uniform. But the small symbolic machine of the door or gate is not subject to her powers. She's a humanoid mechanism which is set into operation by the whistling of the locomotive that announces their advance. It's an automatic sliding door, a machine into which a human agent has been incorporated. The hand is the agent. When you hear the peeping of the railway, her hand conducts a gesture which means stay back, and is an action which affects this, stop. This gesture which says stay back, stop, means this by conducting a surrogate action. If the motorbikes did not brake, her hand would scarcely be able to bring them to a standstill. We really are dealing with a kind of relay here. The hand triggers what is to be attained with a metaphor for something that the hand alone cannot achieve. It is a symbolic gesture that is indexically linked to work that is, however, done elsewhere. Coming back to pickpocket, the question is how the law impinges upon life. How does it steer movements? How is the coordination of hand and eye shaped? In this context, in the context of today's panel, pickpocket is so important. I mean, for those of you who know this film, it's actually fairly obvious, but for those of you who don't know it, it's all about the work of pickpockets. The work of the pickpocket is rooted in a tactility that is entirely cut off from the eye. What is most important in pickpocketing is that the hand works entirely independently of the eye, as if it were an autonomous actor. That is something that I think is very germane when we think about the link and relationship between eye and hand and face, and how that is filmed. It makes clear that the eye betrays the hand in this case, if the eye is directed to the hand. pickpocket who observed his own hands would give himself away at once to the police. So it's absolutely vital for the pickpocket to separate the link between hand and eye, to cut through it. And it's interesting that this connection is one that is so vital for so many films in this project. This division between eye and hand cuts through a vital circuit in terms of evolutionary history, something that is fundamental for Homo sapiens. Walking upright, as Leroy stresses, was something which made early humans able to see their hand very clearly. And that made it possible for Homo sapiens to turn the hand into a highly subtle tool, which meant that the jaws no longer had to tear apart the prey. It was possible for the jaws to recede somewhat, to become smaller in the teeth as well, thus creating the conditions for the mouth to articulate language. The deft agility of the pickpocket cuts through this anthropotechnic link, which lies at the start of the career of Homo sapiens through evolutionary history. The independence of eye and hand turns the pickpocket into a cultural being that denies the basis of his nature. What's also striking is that the camera in pickpocket, as is typical of Bresson, again and again shows people in a framing that only shows the area around their hips, cutting out the movement of the torso or of the lower body. The face of the pickpocket does not reflect anything that happens below this line. The non-action of the face denies the action of the hands. When Bresson talks about his models of non-actors, then Pickpocket is a film in which being a non-actor plays a function within the diegesis. So this is a change of status in the subject as an actor or agent or non-actor or relay in the operational chain of gestures whose programs have long become exteriorized in power dispositives and electronic digital automatic machines. But another issue is how the gesture determines the status of the object, the thing. I would like to pick up a distinction here that I feel is important for our discussion, the distinction between object and thing. I don't want to have the film Nimble Fingers screened again because we did just see it. I think you've seen it frequently enough now to be able to recall it readily. In Nimble Fingers, as has been mentioned repeatedly already, we see highly routine, rapid movements which virtually without hesitation work on the form of the material, sometimes with tools, sometimes without. And actually, what is at stake here in this final inspection, the last step in the work? What we're looking at is a demarcation of the object, a delimitation of the object. The trousers are folded up and also freed of hanging threads, loose threads, fluff. The operation of folding relates to the trousers as a textile object, but the fingers that feel their way across the surface relate to the individual threads in the fabric and to loose threads stuck on the fabric. You could say the worker is working to strike the right balance here in terms of hylomorphism. As Tim Ingold has said, this could be viewed looking at the trousers as a final project. The object stands before us as fait accompli.
Outer surfaces to our inspection.
The trousers as received from the seamstress are not yet a ready-made object. To become a final object in the sense of an object that can be packed up and sold, the object must stop looking like what it is. The trousers must stop being looking like trousers. They must be transformed into the form of a simple Euclidean object, a square or a flat cube. But the fingers that feel their way across the object and pick elements off it don't relate to the finalization of the trousers as an object. It relates to what Ingold calls the flux and flow of the materials. Cleaning the trousers of the traces of the production process. And at the end, the adhesive tape removes the fuzzy bits that the eye cannot see. It has a haptic that does not require the eyes, whereas the hands need the eyes to look at the fabric and the individual threads. The hands relate to the object in two different paradigms. There is the shaped fabric to which the operation of folding is applied on the one hand, but on the other hand, it also exists as a more or less unstable interweaving of threads with blurry boundaries. By removing fluff and thread, the external boundary of the fabric is smoothed out and traces of manufacturing are removed. The whole purpose of this then is to produce and finish off an object, and cutting off the thread of thought also indicates that an object is completed, and I'm going to cut off my thread of thought now. Thank you. Stage. Après date.